Show me the way. Financial flossing. Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain LLP about business succession planning, the merger and acquisition experience, and successful exits. I'm your host, Dave Sider. This episode I've entitled Financial Flossing for reasons that my guest, Ross Brannan, will be sharing with you. Ross, as well, will tell us a little bit about his background, life experiences. He is a former Florida State Seminole football player, and being a hockey player from Minnesota, I have absolutely no appreciation for what it's like to be an FSU Seminole football player. So hopefully he will tell us quite a bit about that. But he helps business owners, including with some relish for the tagline of flossing, dentists, among other medical groups, with their businesses and investment portfolios, and as well his experiences in selling or buying of businesses. So I ask you to pay close attention to my guest, Ross Brannan. Ross, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So let's start off. Give us a little flavor of your background, your early business experience. Are you a born and raised Floridian?
No, I grew up in Atlanta, Metro Atlanta. Played football at Florida State back in the late 90s when we were really good. We were the closest thing there was to an Alabama back then. You know, we were really good.
Right, right.
Was a starter. We won a national championship. A lot of fun. My career ended due to injury, and I just ended up staying in Tallahassee, not going back to Atlanta. And I kind of fell into real estate. I had a buddy who was interested, and I had a little bit of money. And well, actually, to give the story true context, people will understand, I actually had a disability insurance policy because I got hurt. So I had some cash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a 23-year-old, I did piss some of it away, but not all of it. And so I started buying real estate. So my buddy and I ended up having 44 rental properties. They were all student rentals, and I was managing them.
Around FSU, obviously.
Correct, around FSU. And we have really three universities in town. We have a community college, Florida A&M, and FSU. And so there's about 60,000 college students. And,
oh wow,
you know, I learned managing student rental property is miserable.
That's an understatement, having a similar experience in college, but from the renter side, so to speak. So great education, learned how to deal with money. Then that propelled you to the next phase of your life, correct?
Yeah. So I ended up being pretty successful in real estate, kind of got burned out on real estate. You know, there was a coffee shop, kind of like almost like a coffee stand on campus at FSU. And I was like, you know, that's a cool little business. And, you know, my partner and I, we looked at buying that. We didn't pull the trigger on that because we were talking to our CPA, look at the numbers. It just didn't make sense. And we really didn't know enough about financial statements at the time, but our CPA was like, turn and run. And then we got some guy was like, he was trying to get us to invest in his ostrich business because ostrich meat was, you know, another red meat, which it is. It's very good, but it's just, you know, we don't live in the outback. This is not Australia. And so it was, you found a lot of low grade type of business opportunities kind of come your way if you're moderately successful. And then I ended up, you know, I was a client of a financial services firm, and that firm actually said, hey, you're kind of financially minded. You got a good head on your shoulders. At least we think you do. Come work with us. So doing that and then really kind of gravitating to work with business owners. And I ended up doing a lot of work with dental practice owners, dentists, which they are small business owners, but it's a little bit of a unique niche in that regard.
Share that, if you would, with the listeners, because I've represented a couple of business dentists over the years, and it's a different business model. It's somewhat analogous, I think anyway, to law firms, and that is, you know, you got to run people in and out of the doors, and it's hard to leverage.
Well, yeah. So the thing, I say there's a spectrum with dental practice owners. You have on one side, you have the dentist who owns a job. It's a good job, but it's a job. And depending on what part of the country you're in, it's probably a 250 or 350 income. Now, of course, dentists, you'll never meet one that works 5 days a week. There is a, you know, heaven forbid they work on Friday. It's like a national holiday. Then you have on the opposite end, you've got business owners who happen to be dentists. So I have one client. He works 2 days a week. He has a fee-for-service practice, which means he doesn't take insurance, and he makes $2 million a year. Now, he has three associates, so he's leveraged himself that way. And then you have everybody in between. So it is a unique scenario. And right now, in the last 5 or 6 years, private equity has decided that the dental market is where they want to play.
So they are interesting.
They're all going in trying to buy these practices. And you know, you find this these very unique experiences. And you know, dentists have a bad reputation for being not very good at business. Some of that's earned, some of that's unfair, but it's definitely an interesting time to be in the dental industry.
I don't know if you're familiar with Dan Sullivan and the Strategic Coach.
I am. I've been a part of it.
I got to say, I didn't know. I've been part of it as well. And so I think you're speaking to what Dan talks about, you know, the old trying to think of the book. You're either working in the business or on the business, right? And I could see that with professionals, you know, either they, you know, they're trying to clock away by the number of people, patients, clients, customers that they see, or they build as an entrepreneur a model. And it, you know, I feel for all professionals. I've had to represent them and trying to, even though they make very good money, it's just a lot of hard work. I refer to most professionals as being the equivalent of working on a General Motors line assembly, although they get paid a lot more than people on the line, although that may not be true anymore. I don't know. It's just a lot of hard work.
Well, it's interesting. So one, I've always been an anti-retirement person.
Right.
My dad kind of had a forced retirement when he was in his 50s. He had saved enough money, been a good saver, so he was okay. But I watched how he just kind of cognitively and physically declined over the years. And I'm like, no, thank you. And so when I heard Dan Sullivan's take on retirement, it was like you had me at hello. And if you've never heard it, Google Dan Sullivan retirement. It'll be one of the first things that comes up. It's phenomenal when you actually read about retirement. So you have all these dentists who are selling practices. Now, some of them are in their 60s and they're done practicing for whatever. But I had one guy, he says he was 47 years old. He sold his practice for like $10 million bucks. He was in rural Alabama. And I said to him, what are you going to do now that you sold your practice? He says, I'm going to manage my investments. And I looked him dead in the eye and I said, brother, you ain't that rich. And he,
yes,
and because I'm like, you're not a day trader, so what are you talking about? Well, he's heard me tell that story on my podcast, and he texted me and say, hey, are you talking about me? I'm like, yeah. And he calls me, he's like, man, I regret selling so much. And it's like, I heard the statistic that 75% of business owners regret selling like 24 months after they sell. And like, you know, he was making probably $1.2 million a year as a business owner, which there's tremendous tax advantages to earning income as a business owner. Now he's making $600K as a W-2, no tax advantages at all, no control at all. You know, there's also small town Alabama, you know, that was his baby. Now he sold it out to, you know, a corporate entity. He still works there, but he's got a non-compete. He has an earn out. So it's like, okay, if you go back to start a practice again, where are you going to do it at? And so I tell people, it's like, your business is the golden goose. Owning a business is the greatest way to create wealth in this country.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, okay, maybe you could sell it for $10 million at 47 years old. Well, acquire the skills to grow it where at 57 or 67, it's worth $20 or $30 million. And it's just like, we're so short-sighted because they throw these multiples. It's like, oh, I'm getting this. And as you said earlier, the multiple, your first offer is it, you know, they, oh, here's $10 million. Well, by the time it's all said and done, they're going to give you $7 million. Yeah.
Well, let's dig into this a little bit deeper because I have a personal opinion with the way medicine is today. We're all going to live to be 100.
Correct.
So the notion that we should retire at 65 is lost on me.
Wait, but it's in the Constitution, isn't it?
What? So, see, this is a great part. So you talk about succession planning. So you must be getting into some coaching with them about Let's step back and look at this. Just like the example you gave a minute ago, how is that received? I mean, how do you develop that conversation?
They really struggle with it. And this whole retirement concept, when you learn about it and you read it, I mean, you see, like right now, France, you retire at 62 and you get a government pension forever. The president of France is trying to increase that or move that to 64. 2 years, they're having widespread protests across the country. The level of entitlement is insane. And so
yes,
it's like, you know, retirement sucks. No, I mean, like mm-hmm. 1 out of 10 people enjoy it. I've met people, they retire and they go to like deep depression because they mm-hmm. don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. That's like, if you're right. a business owner, I don't care if you're 80 or you're 40, you have to have a plan for your next act in life. We are not supposed to sit there and watch news all day or TV all day. There's only so much golf you can play.
I had that conversation with a guy that retired 2 weeks ago where he discovered that. I don't use the word retire with anybody. I use the term rewire.
It's great.
Because I think we have such a golden opportunity for all of us in this country. First of all, we're blessed to be in this frigging country. We got hit with the lucky stick, you know, at the end of the day. And, you know, I think we're all going to have a lot more opportunities. We're going to be in better health than our parents. I think the adage was with Social Security that you could get it at age 62 or 65 back when they created in the 30s, because frankly, nobody lived to 70. So they're going to have a big payout.
No, but did you know that when Social Security was created, life expectancy was less than 65? And they didn't put, you know, for lack of a better term, a cost of living adjustment, so a life expectancy adjustment on it. Because if they did, you wouldn't get Social Security benefits, so you're 80 or 82 now.
Right. So you're dealing with people all over the Southeast, at a minimum, maybe even more than that.
I've got them nationwide, but I mean, all over the country, but you know, I do tend to have more of a focus in the Southeast.
And so your area of the world, you know, you've got some big cities, you got small cities, a lot like this area of the country for me, Kansas City. And I find that what people's expectation for succession planning is really pretty much the same throughout the country. And by that, they're looking for a way to have, first of all, security. Would that be a fair statement more than anything else?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you walk them through that process in your business? Because you're dealing with higher end people too. I mean, compared to maybe just the mainstream.
Well, it is all relative because, you know, money is all relative. It doesn't matter if you make 30 grand or 30 million. Everything's all relative. But you have to figure out, you know, what people call the wealth gap. Okay, what are my assets worth outside of my business? So I've got $5 million of assets that I could use to create income outside of my business. Well, to create the lifestyle I want to live, I need $20 million, hypothetically speaking. So that we have a gap of $15 million. Now, is your business worth $15 million? More often than not, it isn't. So
correct.
What can we do to increase value, to increase the multiple, to get your business sellable at $15 million. Now, the reality is, in my opinion, if you think you need $20 million to live on whatever your retired life is, it's probably more than that. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But, you know, sometimes that wealth gap is very small. Sometimes it's insurmountable.
Any percentages? How many think that they're close versus, you know, those are way off?
I think they're probably more. I don't really have the percentages, but I'd probably say you're probably going to get like 25% that are close, probably 50% that are kind of in that mid-range, and 25% that holy cow, there's no way you're bridging that gap.
Right.
And sometimes you just got to be the bearer of the bad news.
You know, the truth will set you free at some level. And, you know, there's no point in misleading people in what we do because it's going to cause them a lot of anxiety. Otherwise, and, you know, frankly, we haven't done our job. My sense is that you get people set up to sell and then help them after they sell, so to speak. Are you involved in the middle of the process? I mean, sometimes I find financial planners are very, very important just to walk people down the road. Because in doing deals, there's a what I call deal fatigue. There's going to come a point where they're worn out. You know, as you pointed out, they'll start out with a number. They're fixated on the number. And with all of the grief that they have to go through sometimes, and I shouldn't use the grief, but just all the work, sometimes they find themselves going, is this really worth it? Is this what I wanted to do? Kind of the opposite of your scenario where the guy got out too early, the dentist in the small town in Alabama.
Well, it's emotionally exhausting for people. And I think private equity knows this, and they'll drag it out. You know, they're always, everyone calculates their EBITDA differently. And of course, EBITDA is not a generally accepted accounting principle, so they can all calculate it differently. And by the way, if you've ever heard Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's partner, talk about EBITDA, just look it up on YouTube. It's pretty funny. He's not a fan. But they just know they've got you worn down. You've already emotionally left the business. They can nickel and dime you those last 6 weeks, and you're just done. And they kind of get you. And I think private equity knows that when they do that. Now, I think a lot of times the financial advisor can be kind of an emotional support counselor through the process. Now, and as we talked about earlier, I mean, off air, there's some strategies that you can implement to mitigate or reduce your tax liability on the sale. And a good advisor will know some of those, as well as a tax attorney or unfortunately, this is going to piss some people off, excuse my French. Most CPAs are clueless on that stuff and they're not going to take the time. Not all of them, but a lot of them are.
Well, I think it's like everything else. There are subspecialties. They just are. And the frustration for me and my clients is where I'll get an attorney on the other side that doesn't engage in succession planning or specifically in M&As. You know, the attorney who was the litigator for the company trying to do an M&A. And you'd rather work with someone that understands the work because it'll get done probably quicker, better, with a happier result for everybody or a shorter period of time. Can you share, obviously not mentioning any names, like the Alabama dentist, but can you share any successes that you've seen and what caused someone to have the success, if there's some kind of a lesson learned behind it?
Well, I'm a little biased in my perspective because I think all these people in the dental space are selling too early.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Okay, great. Please extrapolate on that.
Well, I know people who are, I know numerous people under 50 who have sold. And
I didn't know.
And I know numerous people in the early 50s who sold. And sure, it's great. I mean, you typically have a 3 to 5 year earnout when a DSO, which is dental private equity, buys you out. And you've got your money and you're kind of enjoying life. The pressure is off. Of course, I've never owned a dental practice, so I can't speak to the pressure of it or the neck and the back issues, but I know plenty of people still doing it. And, you know, I just think they're gonna wake up in a few years and try and figure out, what am I doing? And they might be living high on the hog right now, but I could foresee them not anticipating the cost of living increases that are coming. Maybe their investments don't perform as they thought they would. You know, I always like to plan for 5. And if I get 10 on my rate of return, that's great. But a lot of people like to plan for 10 and they don't know what to do if they get 5.
Right.
So, you know, it's just these, I just think, you know, some people are sitting pretty right now, but I don't ever want to retire. Maybe I'll transition to do something different.
There you go.
But I don't want to stop working. My wife would kick me out of the house. She'd be like, she's like, go work at Walmart or something. Just get out of here.
Well, my wife and I, to that point, have an agreement. She married me for breakfast and dinner, but not for lunch. Somewhere in between, I've got to go. So you probably would help some people delay the sale, you know, so they didn't punch out in, you know, their 50s. How did you do that? What strategies, what methodologies did you put together?
Oh, I just tell them conceptually. It's like, you own the cash register. That cash register is throwing you off, you know, whatever your income is. Let's just use it. Let's say it throws you off $600,000. That's your income. You're basically selling your cash register for 5 to 7 years of income today.
Right.
That's what you're doing. That's all you're doing.
Yeah.
Would you not rather have the cash register?
Right.
For the next 10, 20, 30 years?
Well, to your point, I really ask people to look at the insider transaction. Is there somebody in the business, especially with professionals, that can buy you out? You have that cash stream. You know, I'd like to create an annuity that allow you to do this for quite a while.
Yeah, but they're not going to buy them for the same multiple that private equity is going to buy it for.
You're right. You're right.
That guy's going to buy it for 3. Private equity is going to buy it for 7.
But at the same time, you can, as Dan Sullivan would say, or actually my trainer was Dan Taylor, God rest his soul, he's passed. But he said, can we all agree that our objective would be if we could work 2/3 less time, but for the same amount of money annually, would you take that deal? And my attitude would be for my clients every day of the week.
Well, my client who has a fee-for-service practice, makes $2 million a year, but he only works 2 days a week. He says to me, he's like, Ross,
there you go.
I am, quote, retired compared to what these guys are saying.
Right, right.
I mean, why would I sell? And he goes, when I sell, I'm not selling to private equity. I'll pay it forward and sell to an associate.
There you go. That, I think, is a great way to look at it. But you've got to become that entrepreneur. And, you know, all of us, I shouldn't say all of us.
Well, so that's the thing. You've got to create, you know, not everyone's wired that way naturally. So you've got to create the skills and take the effort to become that person. Some people naturally do it more than others, but like, are you willing to get your hands dirty to try and acquire those skills?
Absolutely. And have you recommended people to go certain places to kind of acquire those skills?
I talk about Strategic Coach a lot. I'm a big fan of Strategic Coach. I talk about it a lot. I haven't had a ton of success with that, quite frankly. I think you just have to be hungry to learn more. I mean, there's a lot of these dentists tend to kind of flock together in groups. And, you know, lots of times these groups are all about retirement, retirement, retirement. It's so funny. You hear people talk like dentistry is the worst job ever. It's like you're a roofer in Arizona in July or something. It's like, it ain't that bad. I'm not saying it's great, but it ain't that bad.
Yeah. I wonder what the perception is. I ask everybody what their perfect job would look like if it's not this. It's interesting, the wide range of answers. So part of our mission with the podcast is to talk about business succession, but it's also talk about mergers and acquisitions. So do you have a feel now versus maybe 10 to 20 years ago, and maybe in fairness for you, 10 years ago, how many dentists are selling now to private equity groups versus other dentists are just shutting their practice down versus 10 years ago?
Well, 10 years ago, it really wasn't happening. 20 years ago, it absolutely wasn't happening. I mean, you've had, obviously, corporate dentistry has been around for a while, but the DSOs are coming in at a much greater level. And you've now got dentists basically saying, I don't want to sell to a DSO. I want to create my own mini DSO.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I appreciate. I'm like, you get it. You get it. I think that's great. Now, they're probably eventually going to sell to a DSO or whatever. But so you see that a lot now. I just think it's critical. It's like, you know, if you have your second act planned out, okay, that's great. Then if you want to sell, sell. I do think selling young is a mistake. But, you know, it's a free country. You can do what you want. You're leaving a lot of money on the table when you don't realize it. And if you're going to sell, it's important to do some good tax planning with that. Because there are legitimate strategies that are available to dramatically reduce your tax liability, and that's more money for you, less money for the IRS.
Let's just talk in terms of years. How many years do you recommend people get their business ready to sell? How much pre-planning?
Well, you know, we here in the world that you and I live in, we always hear 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And most people will call you on Monday and say they want to be out by Friday.
Yeah, right.
Or, hey, I'll give you 90 days. It's like, now a dental office is a little bit different than, say, a manufacturing company with 150 mm-hmm. employees. That's a different animal. For a dental practice, you know, systems are key, and getting those numbers up are key. So getting high revenue procedures in the office. So it's a little bit easier to sell a practice than it would be to say, sell, you know, some of the companies that you typically deal with. But, you know, the reality is, it's like, if you're 45, just to use that number, that's how old I am, and I want to sell, I don't need to be trying to sell next year. I need to have a longer plan, because there's always variables that are going to come up that you haven't planned for, and you never know what's going to happen. But I still do not advocate selling your business when you're young. I think it's a mistake.
So it sounds like you've developed a process that you take people through nonetheless, if they're going to go down this road, if they're thinking about selling.
Yeah, I try and talk them out of it. I mean, you know, quite frankly, if they sell their business, it's going to help me more, because now they've got a bunch of money that they need help with. I'm like, well, I can help you with that. But I'm like, if I were you, I wouldn't sell it. Here's why.
That's how I know you're a good financial advisor, because you're working against yourself, essentially. This is not a smart move. By the way, if you do this, I'm going to make a lot more money. Do you really want to do this? No. What do you see that's going to happen for 2023? Because, you know, I read things left and right about supply chain. I guess that's coming back. But guess what? Most people, at least most of the business I see, they overstocked. Okay. So I know a lot of manufacturing distribution business are sitting on inventory. There's not as much in the way of purchasing going on as there were in the prior 2 years because of supply chain. I can't think that impacts dentists. Inflation is there, but does that really impact dentists or people in the medical industry, because most of them have insurance?
Well, it actually does. So I have one client.
Oh, okay.
One client who is a dental practice owner who owns their job. They own a job, not a business person. And what happened is all of a sudden they realized, I'm having cash flow issues. All their costs went up. They didn't increase their rates, and they were still living that lifestyle of working 3 days a week, and they weren't willing to work more. So they have to increase their rates now. And I'm asking the people in the know, it's like, hey, is this increase in interest rates, while it seems like a lot historically, it's not that big, is this going to slow down private equity? And the answer is no, it's not slowing them down.
I don't think it'll slow down private equity. What it may be is they could play a little more hardball. They could say, you know, I'm the go-go days of the last, well, for me, 10 years, you know, where it's like, I got money, let's just buy something. They may have to be a little more calculating, a little bit more cerebral, be able to stick their, you know, wet their fingers, stick it up in the air and try to figure out which way the wind is blowing at a higher level. But there's still a ton of money out there. I think what will happen is, you know, maybe some of the multiples will drop. Maybe there'll be some more considerations given to EBITDA as far as, you know, what they think it's going to cost specifically if they bring in a new dentist, or, you know, any number of adjustments, insurance, you know, just the underlying costs. But it plays a little bit to the buyer's hand, but there's still a lot of money and they're all searching for deals.
Yeah. That's true. There's a lot of money out there, and they want. And what they found is, I mean, they like dermatology. They like veterinarian too. So they're liking all these medical subspecialties. So dermatology, veterinarian, dental, and, you know, it's just really interesting to see where this evolves over the next 10 years.
Let's go to that with you. Where are you going to be in 10 years? You have a crystal ball. You're able to figure out what your life looks like. Where do you see yourself in this profession?
I see myself doing this because I love what I do, and I have no interest in retiring at all. And I'm only 45, so I'm 55 in 10 years. You know, obviously, you know, maybe my specialty swivels one way or the other. Mm-hmm. It's one of those situations. But I like doing this type of stuff. I like helping people. And I'm kind of like the compound interest of continuing to do what I do. Just, you know, it helps you out.
Any lasting thoughts you might have, any call to action, or little, is there that one nugget you'd like to share with my listeners relative to what you're all about and how they ought to look at themselves going forward with their businesses?
Well, I would say this. Your business is the golden goose. So if you're going to sell it, make sure you have a good reason, and make sure that you have your second act planned out. Don't be like, oh, we're just going to travel, and, you know, we're going to build a vacation home and go visit the grandkids. No, you have to have a real plan to do that. And the other thing is, you are literally lighting a fire to money if you do not do pre-sale tax planning.
Agreed.
And talk to a professional about that. That's an area that my partner and I work in. Obviously, you know people too. There's just a lot of areas where you can save a lot of money. And I would argue the highest rate of return you will ever get is a dollar taken back from the IRS.
That's a good call. Plus, it's about giving yourself the information so that you know what the options are. So you enter into this being confident of some of the opportunities that could be available to you. Doesn't mean you have to take care of all of them. Like we were talking offline, you know, conservation easements were a great thing until the feds show up. So, you know, you have to honestly look at this on a year in, year out basis. You know, this year we're going through this with clients because we do a lot of this work, and more likely than not, non-competition agreements are going to be dramatically eroded.
Yeah, they are.
So I'm not sure if you sign them, you know, if they're going to be enforceable anymore. I do know that non-solicitation and trade secret agreements and confidentiality agreements are enforceable. In other words, it's no different for tax. Every year you got to figure out what's going on and adjust your business accordingly. You obviously represent people beyond just dentists. Give everybody a flavor of who you've helped, because I don't want to put you in the slot to say it's just dental groups.
Well, it's obviously dentists who own their own practice. It's small business owners, and small being a relative term, but doesn't mean the guy who owns the print shop down the street where you go get your copies made. It's you know, a business, you know, that's doing a large amount of revenue. It basically means a closely held business, as you know, but also right. Do a lot of work with high income professionals. So that might be a high income physician. It could be a high income somebody else, because there's a lot of tax planning that my partner and I do when working with clients to help reduce their tax liability. So if they're Excellent. Not a business owner.
Well, I want to thank Ross today. And Ross, how do people find you? Where do they go? What's your phone number? What's your website? What's your email address? Can you help us with that?
Yeah. So just my phone number is 850-566-7999. 850-566-7999. My website is Ross Brannon. That's BRANNON.com. RossBrannon.com. It's in the process of being rebuilt, but it's still functional right now. But if you have any questions, you can give me a call. You can shoot me a text. And be happy to talk with you.
So I'd like to coin this the flossing forecaster, Ross Brannon. I love your website and Flossing Financial. I think it's just very ingenious. If you're in search of assistance with your business, obviously Ross is one of those individuals you need to talk to, including but not limited to people in the medical space. But beyond that, if you need any help, please go to my website, davidsider.com, because you'll see a listing of my guests, and you might find someone with a particular expertise that you're looking for. And by the way, call me. I give away free consultation, and that's a little misleading. Nothing's free, let's be honest. But I would like to sit down and talk to you to see if I qualify to help you. Also, if you would, subscribe to the show, rate it for me, leave me a comment on your favorite podcast platform, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Again, Ross, thank you. This has been a great episode. I've learned some things, especially in your particular space, I wasn't aware of. So long, everybody. We will see you soon.
See ya.
And for my listeners, this podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to create an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, please, all business owners should consult with their attorney and their business professionals on their distinct circumstances.